We are certainly grateful for your presence this morning, and that is especially so with regard to those who are visiting with us today. And as was already mentioned, we appreciate your presence. I want to add my statement of appreciation to those already given, and to encourage you to question any of the practices or teaching that is present and that we engage in our worship and teaching today, because we would certainly be honored to give an answer concerning those things that we teach and practice. We consider that important. We are heeding the admonition given by the Apostle Peter to always be ready to give an answer for the hope that lies within us. We are encouraged by any opportunity to do so, and so if there is anything that you may not understand or want to talk to us about, then let's open our Bibles together and study. Of course, that is the purpose of our time together, beginning now, to open God's Word and study together. And the topic that we're going to be considering is the topic of authority and obedience. And I want to begin by making note of the fact that when we talk about obedience, and of course the question that we're going to be asking in the lesson this morning is, will you obey Jesus? That obedience comes as a direct result of the recognition of Christ's authority on earth. And that is something that is not fully understood by the majority of religious people as to what the extent of that authority is and what that authority entails. And we're going to spend a little bit of time discussing the authority of Christ and asking that question, will you obey Jesus? We want to begin by making note of Jesus' statement to his disciples in Matthew chapter 28. And verse 18. Matthew chapter 28 and verse 18. This, of course, immediately prior to his ascension into heaven, where he affirms to his disciples, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. All authority. Now, we might state, and it is a true statement, that when Jesus Christ says, all authority has been given to me, that leaves no authority for any other. That's certainly a true statement. Since Christ has been given all authority, and that term all is inclusive, what that indicates is that no one else has authority religiously, or authority, period. And some might say, wait a second, what about kings? Kings have authority. And yes, they certainly do have authority, but only authority that is granted them by Jesus Christ. Say, what about elders in the local church? We are told that elders are in a position of authority in the various offices in the church, whether it be deacons or teachers or evangelists, that there is certain authorities that are intrinsic in that work. And again, that statement is true, but that authority derives from Jesus Christ. And an individual who goes beyond that authority given as an ambassador, as a servant, as a representative of Christ, then that individual goes beyond his auspices and his office and his work, and thus sins against God. Using that example of elders, the elders are given the position of oversight in the local congregation. They're given instruction to teach the flock, to feed the flock. They're told to be superintendents or to exercise oversight in the flock, and they have that authority to do that because it has been delegated to them by Christ. Christ, the repository of all authority. But when we say that the elders have authority, the elders are limited in what they have the authority to do. They don't have the right, for example, to make decisions separate and apart from God's word. They don't have the right to legislate, in other words. It is not as some teach with regard to positions such as that, well, what we need to do is listen to what the elders say, and whatever the elders say we're to do, and if the elders are wrong, that's their responsibility. And we don't have to worry about that. No, elders don't have the right to make those kinds of determinations. They are to exercise oversight and to guide and protect the flock. Same thing could be said with regard to deacons or evangelists or teachers or what other position or work that God has given to his people. The apostles would be a wonderful example of this. The apostles had authority. We talked in our lesson this morning, Bible class, about the authority that the apostles had with regard to the appointment of men to serve as servants in Acts chapter 6. But that authority is given them by Christ. So it all goes back to Jesus Christ. And we need to recognize the truthfulness of that statement. All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. But as we talk about that, there is something that is extremely important. And that is that intrinsic within this concept of authority is the requirement of obedience. That is, if we acknowledge the fact that Jesus Christ has all authority, that He is the one who determines how it is that we're to conduct ourselves, how it is that we are to live our lives, how it is that we are to order our existence, then indeed we are responsible to obey Him. And it would be inappropriate for us. It would be unacceptable for us to disregard the requirements of the will of Christ and to do as we wish rather than as He requires of us. And so intrinsic in this concept, as we talk about the question, will you obey Jesus, is that obedience is a direct result of the recognition of the authority that Jesus has over us. And that authority is complete, and that authority is total. We do what we do, live as we live, make the decisions that we make every day in our lives with regard to all of the relationships that we sustain on earth, with regard to all the activities that we do while on this earth, as a direct result of what Christ has authorized and told us we are to do and how we are to act. So let us keep that in mind. And I want to give you some examples of things that I think will help us to understand that direct correlation between authority and obedience. And I would remind you, for example, of the text of Luke chapter 18 and verse 25 of the text. And remember that when Jesus proclaimed for the wind and the sea to be still, that the wind and the sea obeyed. Notice the statement, Luke 8, beginning in verse 24 and going through, I believe, verse 26 of the text. And they came to Him and awoke Him, saying, Master, Master, we're perishing. And He arose and rebuked the wind and the raging of the water, and they ceased, and there was a calm. But He said to them, Where is your faith? And they were afraid and marveled, saying to one another, Who can this be? Notice this, for He commands even the winds and the water, and notice, they obey Him. In a sense, I suppose we could say it's accommodating. That when we talk about obedience and will, it can hardly be said that the wind and the sea have a will. That in other words, the wind and the sea might disobey Jesus. Now we can say that a wind is contrary, and by that we mean that it doesn't act the way we want it to act, but we don't want to personify wind and water to the point where we have this capricious notion about their elements. They have no will in that sense. But I want you to recognize that what the disciples understood is the authority of Jesus, the power of Jesus, the right that Jesus had because of His place, because of His person, because of His power, to determine even the physical elements and to mold those elements to His pleasing and to His purpose. And so, in that sense, we are told that He commands even the winds and the water. And because of who He is, who can this be? Because of who He is, when He commands even the physical elements do what it is that Jesus says to do. Now using that, let's make note of the text of Colossians chapter 1 and verses 16 and 17. Because it deals with Christ as Creator. Notice what the Apostle Paul had to say in verse 16. By Him, having reference to the Christ, all things were created that are in heaven and are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. Now one thing to note in this text is that references are made to authorities within the context of verse 16. When you talk about thrones, that's referencing authority. When you're talking about dominions or principalities or powers, all of these things have reference to authority. But Jesus Christ is the originator or creator of these things. All things were created through Him. Notice, they were created for Him. And notice this, He is before all things. Jesus Christ is preeminent. He has the first place. He is the ascendant one, in contrast, even to all of the dominions upon this earth. It is in Jesus Christ that all of these things consist. And so when we talk about creation, When we talk about the existence of the world and all of the nations on the earth and the thrones and dominions and principalities, whether it has reference to men or whether it has reference to the physical creation, it exists and subsists through Jesus Christ. And as such, in that position of preeminence, it can be said that Christ has all authority. Why is it that the winds and the sea obey Jesus? When Jesus says, "Peace, be still," they immediately are calm. It is because He is the Creator, because He is the one that made the wind and the sea. And certainly it is going to heed His will. It is that because of His authority, His position, His power. So we need to keep that in mind. And we want to give a number of other examples. What about the unclean spirits? There's a text in Mark 9, and it's by just one example of a number of different ones that we could turn to, where Jesus cast out evil spirits, cast out demons. And on that text, or in that text of Mark 9 and verses 25 and 26, we are told that when Jesus saw the people coming running together, He rebuked an unclean spirit. And He said to it, "Deaf and dumb spirit, I command you," notice again, "I command you, come out of him and enter him no more." Within that concept of a commandment is authority. Jesus Christ commanded by the authority that He had as God the Son. He said to the unclean spirit, "Come out of him and enter him no more." And notice we are told there that the spirit cried out, convulsed him greatly, and came out of him. And he became as one dead, so the many said he is dead. He came out of it. He could not do otherwise because of who Christ was. Because of his position. Because of his power. Because of his authority. The unclean spirit. Those who are in fact enemies of the cross of Christ, those who are the minions of Satan himself, must obey Jesus because of who Jesus is. Now, I don't know how many of you have watched various television shows and movies over the past years that have dealt with exorcisms. It's certainly not something that should be of great consideration to us, but I do enjoy watching the Sci-Fi Channel, and on occasion they come up with some wild stuff like that, and I normally turn it off real quickly. But one thing that I've noticed is that whenever there is a so-called exorcism, and you have the so-called Catholic priest who comes up and he starts sprinkling the holy water, and he starts praying the Hail Marys, and he goes through all of this process, it isn't easy to exorcise an evil spirit. And they just hang on, and they blaspheme, and they cause all sorts of convulsions, and sometimes you can't get them out. They just won't come out. Let me tell you something. If Jesus Christ determines by His authority that an unclean spirit comes out of a person, it comes out immediately. Because He has all authority. He has all power. It's because of who He is. It is because of the position that He holds as God the Son, that when He commanded, "Come out from him and enter him no more," not only did the Spirit come out of him, but He entered him no more, because God, through Jesus Christ, had commanded it. So Jesus Christ has all authority. In James chapter 2 and verse 19, you will remember that the demons believe in Jesus Christ and they tremble. And the reason they tremble is because of who Jesus is. And because He has power. Now, third point as we continue on in this discussion, what about diseases? Matthew chapter 8. You remember in Matthew chapter 8, beginning in verse 5 of the text, that Jesus entered Capernaum. And there was a centurion on that occasion who came to Him and said, "Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed and dreadfully tormented." Jesus said to him, "I will come and heal him." Of course, He certainly had that ability to heal those who were sick. And we recognize that He did it many times during His ministry. But I want you to notice specifically the conversation that the centurion had with Jesus. The centurion answered him and said, "Lord, I'm not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak a word and my servant will be healed. I am not worthy." Now understand who the centurion was. He stated, "I am a man also under authority, having soldiers under me." Now that may be a somewhat awkward phrase for us in our modern English. But the basic sentiment that he's expressing here is, I too am an individual who has authority. I have individuals who I have authority over. These soldiers. He's a centurion. Not only was an individual who was a leader over 100 soldiers. So he had men who were under his rule. He was able to tell them what they were to do, and they would do it. He said, I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it. He said, I have authority. But he recognized the authority of Jesus Christ. And he understood who it was that Jesus was. So much so that Jesus, when he saw the faith of the man, he marveled and said, there has not been seen this faith in all of Israel. And so he talked about this individual, but here is the recognition in the green writing on the board. He said, I also am a man under authority. He recognized the authority. The reason he did not even feel that he was worthy, himself a man of distinction, worthy to have Jesus even come under his roof, because he knew how subservient he was to Jesus Christ. Where he was on the chain, if you will, on the totem pole, on the ladder, in comparison to Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And as a result of recognizing the authority of the Christ, not only did he have confidence that Jesus Christ could heal with a spoken word, but he also understood his position and said, I'm not worthy that you should even come under my roof. But again, as we note that, he recognized that it was because of the authority that Jesus Christ had, that he had that ability to heal the sick, and in fact, even those who came after him derived their authority and their ability to perform such miracles from him as the Christ. We understand again that they obeyed him. The disease obeyed. When he said, be healed, the disease left as a result of his authority and position. And why not make one final point along these lines, and that is that even death obeys Jesus. Even death. Now death is the great equalizer. It is appointed for man to die once, and after this the judgment. Death is a universal condition. And yet Jesus had the ability to overcome death. You remember in the example of Lazarus, his friend, that as he spoke with the people after Lazarus had been dead and in the grave for several days, he cried out, Lazarus, come forth. And he who had died came out, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was wrapped with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, loose him and let him go. A man who had been dead for several days, so much so that he stank with regard to the decomposition of the body. And Jesus said, Lazarus, arise. Lazarus, come forth. And Lazarus came forth from the grave. Now, of course, there is a greater application in regard to that, because Lazarus lived for a period of time and then died again. But Jesus Christ, the first fruits from the dead, when he was resurrected from the dead, ascended into the heaven where he remains alive. And as a result of his resurrection, affords us the hope that after our death, there will one day be a resurrection of the dead, and that we will rise to meet him in the air and be with him forever. And that victory over death comes because of the authority of Jesus Christ. His authority, because of who he is. Because he is God the Son, has the right to say, Lazarus, arise and loose the bond of death. And he did so. In that example, we find in John chapter 5 and verses 26 through 29 a statement by Jesus concerning these things. And in fact, there is an application that is made as the idea of being raised or resurrected, as well as judgment, is under consideration. I want you to notice what he had to say. As the Father has life in himself, he has granted the Son. God has granted to his Son all authority. All authority has been given to me in heaven and earth. Now notice the statement here. He has granted the Son to have life in himself. Life in himself. That power over death. Notice, he says he has also given him authority to execute judgment because he is the Son of Man. Notice, he has been given that authority because of what? Because of who he is. Because he is the Son of Man. He said, don't marvel at this. And as he talks about executing judgment, the proof of it is this right here. He said, don't marvel, for the hour is coming in which all who are in the graves will hear his voice and come forth. Those who have done good to the resurrection of life, those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation. It is by the voice of Jesus that the resurrection will take place. All the dead bodies The dead bodies of the saints will rise to meet Him in the air when He calls for us at His coming. And it is because of who He is. And it is because of His authority. Because of His position. Because He is God the Son. And brethren, I want you to consider again for a few moments the truthfulness of that. The winds and the sea obey Jesus. Why? Because of His authority. The unclean spirits obey Jesus because of His authority. The diseases, the sick, as He said, be cleansed and be healed, obey because of His authority. And even death, because of His authority, obeys. Now I want you to think about the consequence of this. The winds and the waves, we are told, at His proclamation, peace be still, that they came to a stop. Can you imagine that situation? Here they were in a stormy sea. And by the way, I had opportunity to go over to Israel and to go on the Sea of Galilee. We went early in the morning, and it was probably a good idea. Because early in the morning, it was calm. And it was a very pleasant ride across that sea. It's also called Lake Gennesaret. And it's actually a small body of water. We were able to go across it in about 45 minutes or an hour. I forget how long. But when we came back later in the afternoon, it was pretty windy. And you could see how if there was a squall and there was a storm that came up, that it could be very dangerous. And the disciples feared for their lives. And so they cried out to Jesus, help us. And He did. But can you imagine the disciples on that boat fearing for their lives because the sea was so tempestuous, because the wind was so strong, and Jesus said, peace, be still. And instantly, there was a calm. Now when we read that account, they marvel. They're amazed. What manner of man is this? That even the winds and the sea obey Him. They were amazed because it was such an instantaneous and quick thing. Now I want you to consider that for a moment. Because is it not true that as His disciples, we should learn from the wind and the waves to instantly obey when the Lord commands us? And yet is it not true that often we're hesitant? Often we procrastinate. I want you to understand the significance of Christ's authority. The significance of His being the ultimate authority. The fact that authority resides in Him solely, and it is complete and total. All authority has been given to me on heaven and earth. And what that means is, if Jesus said to do it, there should be no hesitation on our part. It is wrong. It's improper for us to hesitate, to vacillate, to think to ourselves, I'll do it tomorrow, or I might do it, or I'm not sure if I'm willing to do it. If Jesus said to do it instantly, we should do so. And it should be complete and utter and total obedience. What about the unclean spirits? Again, referencing James, the second chapter, we are told that the demons believe and tremble. And considering the fear that they had, again, understanding that you are not to fear the one who can destroy body, but rather fear Him who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. That as the demons tremble, should we not tremble before the great power of God? And that tremble, that fear that we have, lead us again to unquestioned obedience. Recognize that Jesus Christ is the one who will ultimately stand in judgment. We are told that we will be judged according to the deeds that we have done in our body, whether good or bad. We will be judged according to the words of Jesus Christ, because He is the one that is the lawgiver that we are to follow in our day. If He is the one who makes that determination as to whether we will be acceptable or not, shouldn't it be that we immediately and completely, with fear and trembling, do everything that Jesus requires of us? Can we not learn from those unclean spirits? And yet you see so many today that they flaunt their rebellion in the eyes of God. I was going through some internet sites and came across a picture, and it was just a horrific, blasphemous image. But it was the concept of Jesus, and they were ridiculing Jesus, making fun of Him, hanging upon the cross. It was just a blasphemous image. But it just amazed me that these young people could look at a depiction of art, and what it was Him hanging upon the tree. And I'll tell you what it was, because it's not obscene. It was just simply blasphemous. he, of course, as he hung upon the tree, his hands were extended, and they took that to be the Y in YMCA. Remember that song people do, and they sing along to it, YMCA, and they move it? And so here's Jesus hanging upon a tree in this depiction on this painting, and them right beside him with putting the other letters to the word YMCA and forming them. Blasphemous. Ridiculing the Son of God. Ridiculing the Savior. Ridiculing the one that will in the end judge them. Now how can you imagine standing before Jesus Christ in the day of judgment and giving an account for that kind of attitude? And yet it is endemic in our time. It's everywhere. Pervasive. And I'm afraid sometimes even among those who claim to be God's people, there is not that proper fear. It should be present as we contemplate the ruler of the universe determining our eternal abode. We should tremble as we consider Jesus Christ. And as a result of that fear, we should obey Him. What about the diseases? Christ's power over illness and infirmities. And we talked about that when He said, be cleansed immediately. It happened. It was total. You see these faith healers today, or fake healers today, who claim the ability to heal disease. You notice how it is. You know, they'll get an old person up there that they've wheeled up in a wheelchair, even though they walked in on their own power, and they'll tell them to get out of that wheelchair, and they'll run back and forth on the stage just a little bit. They don't run like they were 20 years old by any means, but they're moving a little bit. There's some incremental improvement that you can see possibly. That's not the way it is. What about the man who was lame from birth, who when Jesus said, arise, leapt up, never walked a time in his life, but jumped around as if he had been whole from day one. That was complete and total healing. And those diseases healed whenever Jesus said to heal. And when He said His word, they obeyed completely. Should we not, again, completely obey when the Lord commands us? None of this halfway stuff, but completely. Whatever it is that Jesus expects me to do, without reservation, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to try to come to Jesus on my own terms. I'm not going to come to Him halfway. I'm not going to come to Him and reserve some of what I desire to do for myself. But rather completely and totally obey Him. And then finally, with regard to death. Should we not learn from death? And again, fully obey when the Lord commands us. When we talk about the fact that He said, arise, Lazarus, and Lazarus came forth from the grave. Should we not learn from that? And recognize that the one in that He has the power over physical death has the power to offer us hope for eternity. Because He has the power over physical death, He has the ability to offer us eternal life. I want you to consider that a moment. Jesus' promise, when He said, there are many mansions, He said, I go to prepare a place for you and I will come again. I'm going to come again for you. The promise that we are given in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 when the Apostle Paul talks about the resurrection. In one, having reference to Adam, all men die, but in one man, having reference to Christ, all are made alive. Having reference to Christ as being the first fruits, He being the one who first was resurrected from the dead and remains alive even to this day, and because of His ability to put to an end death, that final enemy that will be destroyed is death. We have the hope of life eternal. If we keep His word, if we fulfill His commands, if we obey at His behest, we can indeed have righteous, eternal presence with God. I want you to think for just one moment as we draw our lesson to a close, the contrast between two groups of people. First one found in Titus chapter 1 and verse 16, where the Apostle Paul describes a people that profess to know God. Again, mere profession is not sufficient. Notice he says they profess to know God, but in their works, they deny Him. Why? Being abominable, they're disobedient. And because of this, we are told they're disqualified for every good work. That's one type of person. They profess to know God. Now again, what does that mean? There are many individuals today. I would think that most individuals, especially those who claim to be Christians, in this religious world today with all the various denominations, that they would say, well, I believe that Jesus Christ has all authority. He said it in Matthew 28:18. Christ has all authority. And yet, they go and do what they want to do rather than obeying Him. Jesus said, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father, which is in heaven. Same statement here. They profess to know God, but they're disobedient. And because of that, they're disqualified. And brethren, you need to recognize it. It's not enough simply to say, I love God, or that I accept that Jesus Christ is Lord. That concept, Lord, has reference to authority. You have to be obedient. Authority requires obedience. And as you look at that contrast, in Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 9, we are told that Jesus Christ, because of His willingness to come to earth and to humble Himself to the point of death, He has been exalted by God, and having been perfected, we are told, He became the author of eternal salvation, there's that hope, to all who obey Him. He is Lord. He has all authority. And as you may note in the lesson this morning, it's basically been one point. And I use several different ways of illustrating it, but the point is this. When you accept that Christ has all authority in heaven and earth, there is a consequence to accepting that. It's something that follows intrinsically. No debate on this matter. If Christ has all authority, it is required of you to obey. If Christ is the head one, if Christ is the one who is in charge, if Christ is the one who determines your eternal destiny, it is He and He alone that you have to concern yourself with. You don't have to please me. You don't have to please the elders of this congregation. You don't have to please any man upon the face of the earth. You only have to please Jesus Christ. Now, in so doing, you will please a lot of people. But the point is, what men think does not matter. All that matters is what Christ thinks. What Christ says. What Christ requires. And so you have to ask yourself, if you're here this morning, do you believe what Jesus said in Matthew 28 and verse 18 when He said, all authority is given to me in heaven and on earth? If you believe it, all that is left is to obey. It's our hope and prayer that each one of us understands the consequence of that and that we will be obedient to Him in the life that we live. We're going to offer an invitation. We don't know the hearts of any who are here today. It may be that you need to respond to the invitation call. If that is the case, if you're not a child of God, but you are sorry for sin and desirous of becoming a child of God, if you will accept Him as Lord, accept that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, accept the fact that all authority has been given to Him in heaven and earth, then you can be saved. Would you be willing to profess that truth before those who are assembled today? Say, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Would you be willing to turn away from the sins that you have committed in your life and turn to God? Would you be willing to submit in obedience, to be baptized, to have your sins washed away? If so, you can rise and walk in a new life as an obedient child of His. We can assist you in this or help you in any way to answer the invitation call. We ask it at this time. Would you come? While together we stand, while we sing.